You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
Soldier sent away.
Bent double, like old beggars under sacks. Knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge, till on the haunting flares we turned our backs, and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched to sleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on, bloodshod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, debt to the hoots of gas shells dropping softly behind. Gas, gas! Quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone was still yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes in thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in, and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face like a devil sick of sin, if you could hear, at every jolt, the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, bitter as the cut of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie. Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. It is sweet and noble to die for one's country. You're listening to Back in the USSR, brothers and sisters. This is Siegfried. And this is the day officially known as Remembrance Day in Canada. But you won't hear that poem by Wilfred Owen, Dulce et Decorum Est, a stridently anti-war poem written by a man who experienced the horrors of war firsthand in too many public ceremonies and school assemblies. Nor would you have heard too many pieces from the other strongly anti-war poet who I'm going to quote at length tonight, Siegfried Sassoon. And before I go on, I should mention that the song, the introduction that I played was Midnight Oil, No Man's Land, which is a song which really kind of captures a lot of the things I'm going to talk about tonight. But Wilfred Owens and Siegfried Sassoon, both of these men were in the British Army in World War I, and yet, even in Britain today, let alone in Canada, they often get overshadowed by our hometown hero, Colonel John McRae, and his openly pro-war propaganda piece known as In Flanders Fields. And so many thousands of kids grow up, as I did, learning that poem in school with its message of take up our quarrel with the foe, masking the horrors of war in a gloss of patriotism. You know, there's no mention of choking to death on the fumes of poison gas, getting blown apart by artillery shells, or getting wounded and getting sucked down to drown in the mud of Passchendaele, Verdun, Ypres, or the Somme. There's only white crosses row on row with red poppies in between. Nothing messy, nothing dirty, nothing agonizing, everything noble, praiseworthy, and worthwhile. And this regarding a horrific war between competing imperialist colonial powers that claim the lives of millions, feeding them into a meat grinder of trenches and barbed wire. Basically because they wanted to divide the world between them. And we're competing for the spoils. So we see history sanitized, prepackaged, and whitewashed for the consumption of the young. I need to say, that's nothing new. Something I've talked about on the show many, many times. As the UK-based Peace Pledge Union, the PPU, said in a recent article in Morning Star, and this certainly applies to Canada as well as Britain, the article said that the government's official approach to Remembrance Day is not about remembering, but about forgetting. Quote unquote. As the PPU's Simon Hill said, quote, the day is almost entirely about British and Allied army forces, and any suggestions that wars might not have been justified, or the deaths were futile, or that people were exploited by the rich and powerful is greeted by accusations of dishonoring the dead. Pretending that the deaths were worthwhile and sanitizing wars is what is really dishonoring their deaths. The government's approach is to use Remembrance Day as a euphemism to encourage people to forget and to go along with militarism today. Militarism is a way in which the ruling class encourages the rest of us to do what we are told. And he said that what we want to see is a Remembrance Day that remembers all victims of war. All victims of war, whether military or civilian, and of all nationalities. Seeing the real horrors of war and not used as an excuse for nationalism. Rather than nationalism, it should build international commitment to peace and unity. And he went on to say that British Prime Minister Boris Johnson on Sunday will be laying his wreath to remember the dead, while British troops are actively training Saudi Arabian troops for an offensive in Yemen. He will talk about remembering death at the same time that children are dying. Militarist policies do not solve problems of poverty and climate change, nor do we reduce terrorism and hate and division by sending men with guns to other nations. You cannot solve deep-seated problems by bombing people. Those in power are using the armed forces in the interests of the rich and powerful. That was Simon Hill of Peace Pledge Union in the UK. What he had to say about Remembrance Day. And he could have said the same thing about Stephen Harper invoking Remembrance Day, Vimy Ridge, and World War I to justify war in Afghanistan. Or Justin Trudeau collaborating with Saudi Arabia in its bloody war of aggression against the Yemeni people, you know, which Canada has done as well as Britain. You know, besides wars against Afghanistan and Yemen, Canada has armed and trained open Nazis in Ukraine in the name of opposing Russia. given total support to the apartheid state of Israel and its oppression of Palestinians, and supported coups in Haiti, Honduras, Venezuela, and now Bolivia, where the elected government of Evo Morales, the first indigenous president anywhere in this hemisphere, has now been overthrown in a right-wing coup, backed by the United States and Canada. Again and again, we see the dead of past wars being used by those in power to justify militarism and warfare in the present day, which means that more people will suffer and die to serve the political agendas of the rich and powerful. And it's a fact that veterans of war are too often used as props to justify any aggressive action that the government takes overseas, exploited as political symbols, and then conveniently forgotten if they step out of line and say something that the government doesn't want them to. The following is an open letter that the poet Siegfried Sassoon wrote to the British government in 1917, protesting the First World War, and it's entitled "Finished with the War, A Soldier's Declaration." It's another thing that you're not likely to encounter in a Remembrance Day service or ceremony. And it goes like this. Lieutenant Siegfried Sassoon, 3rd Battalion, Royal Welsh Fusiliers, July 1917. I am making this statement as an act of willful defiance of military authority because I believe that the war is being deliberately prolonged by those who have the power to end it. I am a soldier, convinced that I am acting on behalf of soldiers. I believe that the war upon which I entered as a war of defense and liberation has now become a war of aggression and conquest. I believe that the purpose for which I and my fellow soldiers entered upon this war should have been so clearly stated as to have made it impossible to change them, and that had this been done, the objects which actuated us would now be attainable by negotiation. I have seen and endured the sufferings of the troops, and I can no longer be a party to prolonging these sufferings for ends which I believe to be evil and unjust. I am not protesting against the conduct of the war, but against the political errors and insincerities for which the fighting men are being sacrificed. On behalf of those who are suffering now, I make this protest against the deception which is being practiced upon them. Also, I believe it may help to destroy the callous complacency with which the majority of those at home regard the continuance of agonies which they do not share and which they have not enough imagination to realize. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Soldier, 1914, watching.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Sting with Children's Crusade. And of course, before that, I read through, in its entirety, the open letter that the poet Siegfried Sassoon wrote to the British government in 1917, protesting the First World War and the carnage of the First World War, entitled Finished with the War, A Soldier's Declaration, which basically called for a negotiated end to the war that would have saved so many lives had it happened. And certainly Siegfried Sassoon would have been court-martialed for writing that public protest letter had he not been deemed unfit for service and basically shipped off to a mental institution in Scotland after he wrote that. Which is incidentally where he actually met Wilfred Owen, the poet Wilfred Owen, and they actually did become pretty firm friends after that. Wilfred Owen was there at the same institution recovering from shell shock, which of course we know today as PTSD. Now, Siegfried's principled stand against the war was not something that many others were prepared to follow, but the sentiments of that letter that he wrote, you know, the sufferings of the troops and the desire for the war to end, were shared by countless thousands of soldiers as the war dragged on year after year, consuming millions of lives with no end in sight. And I know that my great-grandfather, Ernest Weeks, who, although British, was in the Canadian Army in the First World War and was likely even at Vimy Ridge himself, he had had enough of bloodshed after he got out of the army in 1918. Just, he had enough. He'd volunteered for the Boer War before the First World War, and he'd believed in all the king and country propaganda nonsense, but now he just wanted it to be over. He'd been wounded, he had his face sliced up with a bayonet even, and he'd had enough. He wanted some peace, some space to pick up the broken pieces of his life. And he would have told any politician trying to use him for political grandstanding to go to hell. Just like Siegfried Sassoon, he'd had enough of mud and rain. Mud and rain and wretchedness and blood. Why should jolly soldier boys complain? God made these before the ruthless flood. Mud and rain, mangling cramps and bullets through the brain. Jesus never guessed them when he died. Jesus had a purpose for his pain. Aye, like abject beasts, we shed our blood, often asking if we die in vain. Gloom conceals us in a soaking sack, mud and rain. Mud and Rain is another poem by Siegfried Sassoon, which really kind of captures the conditions that soldiers were in on the Western Front during World War I, and the horrific conditions. Conditions which never should have existed, you know, just straight up. Should never have been allowed to happen. That war never should have been allowed to happen. So my great-grandfather, Ernest Weeks, had enough of a war and turned against war. And the same holds true for my granddad, Thomas Leybourne, my mom's dad, who was born in 1918 in a coal mining town in northern England, practically on the Scottish border. And now there's a man who needed bravery just to survive. The town of Crook didn't have any sewers, running water, electricity, or medical care. The company controlled everything. The mining company controlled everything in the town. Disease and tuberculosis epidemics were claiming lives every day as he was growing up. And this was in basically the richest country in the world, you know, at the heart of the British Empire at that time, and he was living like that. He actually spoke Scotch Gaelic at home growing up, even though the schoolmasters at his school beat that language out of him long before he was an adult. And I think if he'd known about residential schools in Canada and how Indigenous peoples had their languages beat out of them as kids, he would have identified with those Indigenous kids, because something similar happened to him. And he was conscripted into the British Army in 1942. He was grabbed by the army right off the streets of London and shipped out to South Asia, you know, half a world away, to fight so that the British Empire could keep a hold of its colony of Burma, which was getting overrun by the Japanese army. So once again, he gets caught up in this competition between different colonial empires. You know, the British Empire trying to keep control of Burma, the Japanese Empire trying to take control of it, and, you know, he gets shipped out to fight, basically to do Britain's dirty work, this working class kid from Northern England. And he hated the army, particularly getting screamed at by aristocratic officers. You know, these upper class officers who like scream at him, tell him what to do, think they're better than him. But he formed plenty of bonds with the other working class boys in his unit, which of course was a survival unit. You know, they're fighting, they're pulling together to survive. And in a lot of cases, standing up against the officers just as much as they're fighting against the enemy. One time, he even helped men from another unit get a truck free from the mud, which had been stuck in driving rain while they were under fire from Japanese troops. And the army wanted to give him a medal for that. But my granddad, having known through life experience who his real friends and enemies were, said in no uncertain terms to the officer who tried to pin it on him, who tried to pin the medal on his chest, my granddad said, basically, "Beg your pardon, sir, but shove it up your ass." You know, my granddad, he had helped his comrades who were in danger, and he didn't need or want recognition from the powers that be, the powers which he rightly viewed as oppressors, which had been oppressing his life from day one. And I'm sure he would have used even stronger language to any right-wing politician, right-wing warmongering politician, trying to use him and his experience in World War II to justify more war and bloodshed. And really, it seems that the further we get from the era of the World Wars, the more their memory is used to justify imperialism, empire, wars of aggression. You know, in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Haiti, in Mali, in Iraq, and other parts of the world as well. You know, we get more and more "my country, right or wrong" propaganda at hockey games, sports events, and public events in general. And I remember the display that I saw at the Canadian War Museum in Ottawa, the display on Vimy Ridge, on the Battle of Vimy Ridge, that I saw in 2017 when the government of Canada was celebrating the centennial of the battle, the 100th anniversary, and how it openly admitted that the government of Canada deliberately resurrected the memory of Vimy Ridge for political purposes after the end of the Cold War, to give itself more political legitimacy and more legitimacy to its policies as a way of getting people behind the government and the army in this new age of empire and imperial expansion, when, you know, Canada has so many times like stepped in to back up the United States, the American Empire, in its aggressive actions around the world. And of course, there are some veterans who might be willing to be a pawn in this political theater, but my granddad was not. He was not one of those, and I intend to stay true to his memory and the memory of so many others who refuse to be used. By any government, trying to sell war. I mean, Walter Benjamin's, the Marxist philosopher Walter Benjamin's point that not even the dead will be safe from the enemy if he is victorious is a very important statement to keep in mind on a day like Remembrance Day, as the rich and powerful seek to manipulate the fallen of past wars in service of new and bloody agendas to keep the world safe for the Fortune 500. You know, we have the threat of war all over the place right now. You know, long-standing threat of war against Iran, threat of war against Venezuela, you know, threats of war against, you know, against Russia and China, you know, all kinds of, like, threats of war. And, of course, real war is happening, you know, like in places like Iraq and Syria, in Libya, and all these other places in Yemen. With the United States and its enemies, and with the United States and its allies, I should say, like behind the violence. And manipulating the different forces on the ground to secure their own agendas and their own aims. Capitalism is capable of exploiting the dead as well as the living, brothers and sisters. And that's why official history leaves out so many inconvenient truths. Siegfried Sassoon would never forget the reality of the war that he was made to fight in World War I, but he feared that the rest of us would. I'm going to leave you with a poem of his about what we should be remembering on Remembrance Day and how we must all struggle to put an end to war and to the imperial forces that continue to drive us to war in the 21st century. It's called Aftermath. And just listen, brothers and sisters. Have you forgotten yet? For the world's events have rumbled on since those gag days. Like traffic checked while at the crossing of city ways. And the haunted gap in your mind is filled with thoughts that flow. Like clouds in the lit heaven of life, and you're a man reprieved to go, taking your peaceful share of time with joy to spare. But the past is just the same, and war is a bloody game. Have you forgotten yet? Look down and swear by the slain of the war that you'll never forget. Do you remember the dark months you held the sector at Mametz? The nights you watched and wired and dug and piled sandbags on parapets? Do you remember the rats and the stench of corpses rotting in front of the frontline trench? And dawn coming dirty white and chill with a hopeless rain? Do you ever stop and ask, is it all going to happen again? Do you remember that hour of din before the attack? And the anger, the blind compassion that seized and shook you when, as you peered at the doomed and haggard faces of your men? Do you remember the stretcher cases lurching back with drying eyes and lolling heads? Those ashen gray masks of the lads who were once keen and kind and gay. Have you forgotten yet? Look up and swear by the green of the spring that you'll never forget.
When I was a young man, I carried my pack And I live the free life of a rover. From the Murray's green basin to the dusty outback, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, son, it's time to stop rambling, 'cause there's work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat and they gave me a gun, and they sent me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as we sailed away from the quay. And amidst all the tears and the shouts and the cheers, we sailed off for Gallipoli. How well I remember that terrible day, when the blood stained the sand and the water. And how in that hell that they call Suvla Bay, we were butchered like lambs at the slaughter. Johnny Turkey was ready, he primed himself well, he showered us with bullets and he rained us with shells. And in 5 minutes flat, he'd blown us all to hell, nearly blew us right back to Australia. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as we stopped to bury our slain. And we buried ours, and the Turks buried theirs, and it started all over again. Now those who were living did their best to survive in that mad world of death, blood and fire. And for 7 long weeks I kept myself alive, all the corpses around me piled higher. Then a big Turkish shell knocked me arse over tit, and when I awoke in my hospital bed and saw what it had done, Christ, I wished I was dead. Never knew there were worse things than dying. And no more I'll go waltzing Matilda to the green bushes so far and near, for to hang tents and pegs a man needs 2 legs. No more waltzing Matilda for me. They collected the cripples, the wounded and maimed, and they shipped us back home to Australia. The legless, the armless, the blind and insane, those proud wounded heroes of Suvla. as our ship pulled into a circular quay, I looked at the place where me legs used to be, and thank Christ there was nobody waiting for me to grieve and to mourn and to pity. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as they carried us down the gangway, but nobody cheered, they just stood and stared, and they turned their faces away. And now every April I sit on my porch and I watch the parade pass before me. I see my own comrades, how proudly they march, reliving the dreams of past glory. I see the old men all twisted and torn, the forgotten heroes of a forgotten war. And the young people ask me, what are they marching for? And I ask myself the same question. And the band plays Waltzing Matilda, and the old men still answer the call, but year after year their numbers get fewer. Someday no one will march there at all. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, ooh, go a waltzing Matilda with me.
pasión que funde todo el clamor, el derecho de vivir en paz. Y ojo, nuestra canción que es fuego de puro amor, es palomo, palomar, olivo del olivar, es el canto universal, cadena que hará triunfar el derecho de vivir en paz. La, 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 es el canto universal, cadena que hará triunfar el derecho de vivir en paz, el derecho de vivir en paz.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. First little set there. We had Shane McGowan with, and the band played Waltzing Matilda, which is a very strong anti-war song that talks about the Gallipoli campaign in World War One and just one of the most futile, bloody, and basically criminal wastes of human life in the First World War, you know, where so many men were sent to their deaths on basically a narrow spit of land off the Turkish coast, and sent to their deaths against, like, you know, trench lines and fortifications, you know, and that's what that song was about. And then, of course, the aftermath of that is the soldier comes home, you know, with no legs, and what life is like for him after that, where he can't waltz Matilda anymore, you know, he can't, like, rough it in the bush anymore, he can't go out hiking and camping the way he used to, because he needs two legs for that. You know, that's what happened in World War One. And after all kinds of wars, you know, like those who are crippled by war, they all come back, and then the government usually forgets about them or tries to sweep them under the rug, the casualties of war. And after that, I played Victor Jara, the Chilean communist singer, El Derecho de Vivir en Paz, his song, The Right to Live in Peace, which all people have. Which all people have. And this is really what we're struggling about today, is to ensure that all people have the right to live in peace. And this also goes for this is especially true for those people who have suffered colonization, oppression, exploitation. And that includes the people inside this country itself. The indigenous population, we're still struggling for their liberation to this day. And so people need to remember that struggle as it goes forward and stand in solidarity with them. That's why I want to end the show tonight with Willie Dunn and his song, The Ballad of Crowfoot. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Comes a spring, and it's warm thaw around your neck, the eagle claw upon your head, the buffalo horn. Today a great new chief is born. to raise them fast towards the sun. A heart now beats, a life's begun. It's 1821. Today a Blackfoot soul is born. Crowfoot, Crowfoot, why the tears? You've been a brave man for many years. Why the sadness? Why the sorrow? Maybe there'll be a better tomorrow. Your years are gone, the years have passed. Your heart is set, your soul is cast. Stand before the council fire. You have the mind and the desire of notions wise. You speak so well, and in brave deeds you do excel. And it's 1853, and you stand the chief of Confederacy. You are the leader, you are the chief. You stand against both liar and thief. They trade, raise whiskey, steal your land, and they're coming in swift like the wind-blown sand. They shoot the buffalo, kill the game, and send their preachers into shame. And it's 1864, and you think of peace, and you think of war. Crowfoot, Crowfoot, why the tears? You've been a brave man for many years. Why the sadness? Why the sorrow? Maybe there'll be a better tomorrow. See the settler in more numbers. He takes whatever he encounters. You see the Sioux, all battered, beaten, wrong and right, they haven't eaten. And as per se, we're much the same. It seems like such a heartless game. And it's 1876, and the enemy's full of those death-dealing tricks. Today the treaty stands on the table. Will you sign it? Are you able? It offers food and protection too. Do you really think they'll hold it true? It offers a reserve. Now, isn't that grand? And in return you see all of your land. And it's 1877, and you know the scales are so uneven. Crowfoot, Crowfoot, why the tears? You've been a brave man for many years. Why the sadness? Why the sorrow? Maybe there'll be a better tomorrow. Buffalo are slaughtered, there's nothing to eat. The government's late again with the meat. summer they're sick, and in the winter they freeze. And sometimes you wonder why you signed that day, but they broke the treaties themselves anyway. And it's 1889, and your Death Star explodes, and then it falls. Crowfoot, Crowfoot, why the tears? You've been a brave man for many years. Why the sadness?